Phil Mason Show. Phil Mason Show is on. Is on in five. In five. Four. Four. Three. Three. Two. Two. One. One.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. I'm happy to have you here. Tonight we're going to talk Major League Baseball for the full hour. We're going to take a closer look at the New York Yankees and the Oakland A's. But up first, lots of good stuff happening with the New York Mets. And joining me to talk all about that from bloggingmets.com, Mark Berman is in the house. Mark, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Ready to talk some New York Mets baseball. Have you had a chance to see any of the spring training games yet?
You know, I saw a game on Monday, which was strange because I'm not in New York, so I can't watch it on SNY. And MLB runs some games. I'm always checking to see if they run the games, and so far they hadn't. And Monday morning, I looked, I saw the Mets were playing the Astros. And I'm like, no way, that game's going to be on. I mean, who the hell wants to watch an Astros and Mets game? And it was on, much to my surprise. That was a game where Granderson hit two home runs, which were just rockets. They got out in a second. And even the announcers were saying that those would be home runs in Yankee Stadium and at Citi Field. So those were no spring training cheap shots. So he looked really good. Wheeler pitched three innings, looked really solid. So that was the only game I've seen so far.
I watched them play the Nationals. It took me 7 hours to download that freaking game. So any of you who say I'm not a real Mets fan, jump in a lake.
7 hours for a spring training game. Yes, you're a true Mets fan.
Oh, really? I couldn't wait to watch them play. And I was pleasantly surprised at a few things. I believe Mike Davis hit a home run that night. He also struck out. And, you know, the thing about Mike Davis, we might as well talk about this battle for first base right off the bat.
Sure.
The one thing about Davis, now, Duda played, he was the DH in that game. And the sound of the ball coming off their bats are two different animals. Davis has almost a soft sound when he hits them. Duda sounds like a smash. The guy who hits the ball so freaking hard, it was Travis d'Arnaud. He hit a rocket. But it was the sound of the ball coming off the bat. The whack. I mean, it just seemed a lot different. But Ike Davis, his first at-bat, struck out again like usual. But what do you think about his battle now? There was talk about this 90 games, and I guess we can put it all together, winning 90 games here. And one of the things that Terry Collins had said was that he needs 20 home runs and 80 RBIs out of the first base position, no matter who it is, Davis or Duda. And that's just one of the many reasons that they need, or one of the many things they need for the Mets to accomplish in order to win 90 games. 20 home runs and 80 RBIs out of those two?
Yeah, I mean, Duda has never done that in his life and has not shown that he has the ability to do that at all, so I wouldn't count on that from him. Ike Davis obviously has hit 32 homers. He's had 90 RBIs, so he's shown that he could do it, but does he have any ability left anymore? I mean, last year he was just completely lost. He did hit the home run this spring, which, you know, shows nothing, really. Yeah, I think if anyone is going to do that, it's going to be Davis. But I don't know, you know, it's unclear if he can even do that anymore. The thing about the 90 wins thing, which to the listeners, if they don't know, Sandy Alderson apparently in a private meeting last week said he thinks the Mets can win 90 games. And the funny thing is already this statement has come back to haunt him. Like for the past week, it's been everywhere, like 90 wins, Sandy Alderson, and you know, referring to it all the time. So that is going to that will haunt him for the rest of his life, probably, if the Mets never win 90 games. Just like Fred Wilpon's significant games in September thing, which he said about 10 years ago, is brought up constantly. But for the Mets to win 90 games, it's possible. Then again, every team could possibly win 90 games. Every Met has to have a career year. Yes, first base, you have to get 20 homers and 80 RBIs. D'Arnaud, he wants 15 homers. Terry Collins said he wants 15 homers from, he thinks Chris Young can exceed the 32 homers he hit a few years ago, or 30, whatever it was. Granderson should hit 25 homers. So you're basically asking for career years from everyone, and that just never happens. You know, people get injured, people have down years. So I think the odds of the Mets winning 90 games are really remote.
I think 70 games are more realistic.
I think they'll win. I'm having 76. They won 74 last year. 74, right, last year?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, 74.
And I think they're a little bit better than last year with getting Granderson and Young and Darno playing a full season. So I have them for 76 games, which is still a joke.
Yeah, they were 51-60 with Captain America playing, and they were 23-28 without him.
They're just a bad team all around.
Yeah, whether he plays or not.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always been my point, you know. But honestly, 90 wins is a whole lot. He's expecting a lot from these guys, and I guess that's – or maybe not expecting. I don't think Terry Collins is expecting any of this because he's a little smarter than Sandy Alderson, I think, when it comes to baseball, actual knowledge of the game.
Yeah.
But 90 wins – I remember last season he said they'd only win 65 or 70. So, I mean, he's kind of gone the other side of the teeter-totter, so to speak. But 90 wins is a lot. Especially when you've got a young pitching staff, you're going to probably bring up Noah Syndergaard around June and shut him down around September. You're going to have, and you're going to need at least, and I think Terry Collins said 200 innings from at least two of his starting pitchers, and I don't see that happening either.
No, I mean, Cologne hasn't even pitched the spring yet because of injury. He's, you know, when you get up there, you know, he's 40, going to be 41 years old in May, I think it is. You're not going to pitch 200 innings. I mean, Nice and G have, they theoretically could pitch 200, but they have not shown that they can go deep into games. No starters really anymore go deep into games. So I just don't see it happening. I don't see all of a sudden everyone start suddenly pitching into the seventh inning. It's just not going to happen. And the same thing, everyone's going to, you know, pitch the fifth, sixth inning, the bullpen's going to get overworked, and the bullpen will fail later in the season. Like, that's just the Mets. That's every team, but it's happened to the Mets every year so far. So, you know, you can't blame Alderson and Collins for hyping the team. I mean, in Alderson's case, he built it, so he should be confident in it. But I just don't think the talent is there.
No, they're a ways away. I don't think Collins is the one doing it. I think he was trying to defend the whole thing and explain it all.
Yeah, Collins is just a good guy. He's just, you know, relentlessly positive and trying to put a brave face on everything. He's doing the best with what he's been given. But and he's got to now defend the 90 win thing.
Yeah, he used to not be a nice guy. I think when he went to Japan, he turned the corner, so to speak. He's been great with these young kids, though, and I think that's important. I think he would have made – I think he's done a fantastic job for the New York Mets. I think he would be a great manager in the minors for somebody because he's very patient now. He's learned a lot. I guess with age comes wisdom. But honestly speaking, I don't see any of those things. And you need 40 or 50 saves from Bobby Parnell. And apparently he says he's good to go. And he's got the big beard. And it's all well and good in Flushing these days. But the big story, I was able to watch the first couple innings of Noah Syndergaard pitch. And my goodness, he was bringing the gas. More importantly, he was throwing a curveball from hell. And I think he's going to be okay, but it's hard to really tell after two innings, especially when your two innings really don't mean anything because everyone knows where he's going.
Yeah, I saw the highlights of him a little bit. He looks good. I mean, he's big and tall. He's 6'6". He just looks really intimidating on the mound. But yeah, it doesn't matter. He can, you know, pitch 20 shutout innings with, you know, 50 strikeouts, and he's going to the minors, which is... I think it's a shame. I wrote about this the other day. You know, everything's based on money. So the Mets, you know, they'll delay him until mid-June so he won't be a Super 2. It's just not fair. I mean, if Sandy Alderson really thinks the Mets can win 90 games and you want to field the best team you can field, and if Syndergaard is ready to go out of spring training, he should be on the team. End of story. I don't like this whole, you know, delay their free agency, delay their arbitration. It's not fair to the fans. It's not fair to the player. So, and why wouldn't you field the best team you can field? It's ridiculous. But money talks, especially in all of baseball, really, but especially with the Wilpons, who apparently have no money. So we will not see him until June, you know, mid-June, probably July at the earliest.
Yeah, you never know, too, if at all. You never know. But he's not even in the conversation. They're talking about Henry Mejia possibly going to the bullpen if he doesn't win the fifth spot. And the other two guys are talking about are Dice K and John Lannon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't understand the talk of putting Mejia in the bullpen. He cannot pitch out of the bullpen. It's been proven. He tried to do it. Well, he was brought up too young in, what was it, 2009, out of the bullpen, and it didn't work. But he's pitched out of the bullpen since then, I think, in the minors, and he's not a good reliever. Some people just cannot be relievers. They can't. They have to know when they're pitching. I think Mejia is one of those people. So if he doesn't win the fifth starter spot, they shouldn't put him in the bullpen. They should put him in the minors or just trade him already. But I don't think he'll be an effective reliever at all.
He's a tough trade with three surgeries behind him already in his arm.
Yeah.
That's a tough trade. I think they're going to have to just go with him. When he first came up, I was thinking making him a closer. I think he had the stuff to do it, but some guys just can't do it. Maybe as he gets older, he might have no choice. And that's an interesting position for him to be in, considering in 2009, he was just bringing the gas. But there again goes to show that just because somebody has Tommy John surgery, it doesn't automatically mean they're going to come back the same or even better. You know, he's a prime example of that. And that's a pity for him because, boy, he has a lot of talent. And he's fun to watch, especially when he does start and when he gets in that groove. He's really nice to see. I wish all the best for him because I was always a fan of his. I guess I still am. But it looks like David Wright will be playing this week. And probably Danny Murphy will be playing this week, and that's good. Holding these guys back, yeah, they're a little nervous. And I would be too, especially with Wright, because it's 2 years in a row where he's missed significant time. And unfortunately, previous injuries predict future ones. And I think it's pretty wise what they're doing there with him.
Yeah, the Mets obviously need Wright to play. 150 games, and I hope he doesn't turn into a fragile player who goes down every year, because then the Mets are done if that's the case. They obviously need the guy to lead the team and play well. And Murphy, yeah, I don't know why exactly they're holding him back. He really hasn't had any issues, has he?
Not really, yeah, but he's older too. I think, and that's probably one of those issues. But old enough. But see, here's the thing. Daniel Murphy doesn't have anything to prove either. Neither does David Wright. So, why not let Josh Satin show what he can do at third base? And I think that's important. I liked what I saw out of Wilmer Flores playing second base against the Nationals. He demonstrated that he can handle second base. He made a really good play. Tovar butched it. And that's the other issue at shortstop. If Quintanilla can't go and Tejada's now, he's got a hamstring problem already, you're looking at this Tovar kid, and he's got the glove, I think, but my oh my, I'm not so sure.
If Flores could play shortstop, that would answer so many of the Mets questions. But and they're giving him a fair shot at short, but apparently he's just not good out there.
Well, he's probably never done it.
Flores?
Yeah, I don't think he's played shortstop, has he?
Oh, no, that's his natural position. He did it like for 4 years in the Mets minor league system, but he had like 25 errors a year.
All right.
Well, so that's why they moved him out of short for that reason. But if he could somehow figure it out, man, that would take Tejada out of the equation. That would put a good hitter at shortstop. But if he can't field, Murphy's getting better in the field, but he's still not the best. So a double play combination of Flores and Murphy could just be disastrous.
That's possible, but they have to find some solution. When you're talking about 90 wins and you don't even have a shortstop,
yeah,
that's a big issue. And you've got a catcher in Travis d'Arnaud who hasn't played a full season in 2 years. You've got a third baseman who, by the way, congratulations, is the face of MLB, who hasn't played in 2 years, a full season in a couple of years. These are big issues, and to predict 90 wins is kind of silly. It's like James Dolan talking about the Knicks winning a championship, or else he's going to blow everything up, and that just doesn't make sense. Anyway, great stuff today, Mark. Thanks for being on the show with me.
Thank you.
All right, that was Mark Berman. You can find him at bloggingmets.com. Coming up next, Rush Olson and I will take a closer look at the New York Yankees. They spent $500 million. Too bad the New York Mets won't even spend 90. And we'll be right back. You're listening to the Phil Nason Show.
Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out. My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and the Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Read what happens when an Orange County housewife decides she likes another man more than her husband. Join Brooklyn through her struggles in this coming-of-age saga filled with full-blown drama and real-life secrets that are no longer kept. Two great novels, one great author. You can find Brooklyn and Beau Chronicles at BrendaPerlin.com. That's www.BrendaPerlin.com. Great books and interviews with the authors that write them are featured on the Writer Showcase podcast. I invite you to check it out at thewritershow.wordpress.com. Fantasy Baseball Weekly is a weekly baseball podcast with a fantasy owner in mind. We give you tips, tricks, tools, and everything else we can think of to help you win your league. You can catch us at fantasybaseballweekly.wordpress.com or on philnasons.com. Come check us out.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
here are some words of wisdom from Mr. Know-It-All.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
What a dope. What a maroon.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The New York Yankees failed to reach the playoffs last season, and they went out and did something about it. They spent nearly $500 million something. And here to talk about all that and more, please welcome from Rush Olson, Creative and Sport. Rush Olson's in the house. Rush, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Phil, I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
It's my pleasure. The Yankees, man. It's not, you know, that's a team that I've never been a fan of, to be honest with you. But here's the thing with them. They spend money. And two, they have this amazing global following, global branding, not following. Because I live in Europe, as you know, yes. And I see people all the time. I can tell you, a couple summers ago, I was with some guys. There was a golf tournament here. and we were outside having a couple adult beverages in the town square. And there was a busload of Japanese people, and they all had Yankee hats on. And it was like kryptonite to me.
Every time I've been in Europe, I have not failed to see someone wearing a Yankee hat. And I am always fairly certain it's not because they're big fans of Mariano Rivera's cutter. I think it's just because it's a global brand and it says New York, and that's why they have it on. So, yeah, the Yankees are well known. And you know what else the Yankees are? They are never boring. Never boring.
Never boring. They don't call it the Bronx Zoo for nothing. And I'll tell you what, there's some new faces. Jacoby Ellsbury, Brian McCann, Brian Roberts, Carlos Beltran, Masahiro Tanaka. A lot of new faces in the Yankees organization. And I think that every move they made was the right move.
I have to say, it looks pretty good. The interesting thing to me about the Yankees, and I think the bottom line as to how well they do, is how well do their older players perform. You have guys with tremendous track records. Jeter, Teixeira, Roberts, Ichiro is there. Alfonso Soriano, Beltran, Sabathia. Do those guys hold up and perform well enough for them to win a very tough division? That, to me, is the bottom line as to what happens with the Yankees this year.
Yeah, I agree with you there, too. The other thing for me is their pitching staff. How will that hold up? Now, there's some issues already with CC Sabathia. He's slimmed down. I don't know what happened to him. Remember those little shrinky dinks, you know, we used to put in the oven? That's yes. What looks like happened to him. But they say his fastball reached 88 miles an hour, which is about 4 miles an hour slower than it has been in the past. I don't think that's going to be that much of a concern because the guy, one, knows how to pitch. And two, he knows how to throw strikes. He throws strikes. What do you think about all that?
Well, Andy Pettit was quoted as saying basically what you just said, which is that the guy knows how to pitch. He can make up for that lack of velocity with quality. And I would suspect that is likely to be true, but you can't be certain. I mean, Sabathia, you know, I went back and looked up a little bit of his career to refresh my memory before we did this show. And he truly has been outstanding. And one of the places I looked at what he does, do you realize he's never thrown less than 180 innings in a major league season? That was his rookie year. He threw 180. Other than that, it's been above 200 most seasons. And he has been incredibly durable. The question is, as you get older, that durability, your durability factor does not improve. And that, to me, more than his effectiveness, to me, is his health. At some point, you're not going to be able to be as healthy as you once were. Is that this year? He has clearly taken steps to ensure it will not be this year because he's lost weight. He feels like he's gotten himself in good condition. And so I think he'll be effective if he's healthy. And that sort of speaks to the bigger question around all the Yankees.
Maybe he's one of those freaks of nature like Nolan Ryan, who just, okay, Nolan didn't really lose his fastball, but Nolan Ryan just pitched forever. Maybe he's one of those guys. I don't know. Masahiro Tanaka, 24-0 in Japan. He's pegged as their number two, probably number two in the rotation. He's had a couple of good outings already. He threw two scoreless innings on last Monday, I believe, and he will start today, Thursday. What do you like about him?
Well, that splitter is nasty, Phil. It appears to be as advertised. It falls off a table, and if you would think that he's going to get a lot of strikeouts with that pitch, is his fastball going to be good enough to keep hitters off of his breaking stuff? Well, certainly it was in Japan. Will that translate over here? We don't know yet, but the early returns are pretty good.
That splitter's nasty. I don't think he's going to be as good as Yu Darvish, at least as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. But if he can keep guys off balance enough to throw that splitter, he's going to be vicious. He's all right, you know what? And he's another one of those guys like Sabathia who's just a freaking workhorse. And that's a beautiful thing to watch if you're a Yankee fan, I suppose.
The Yankees have the potential to have a very deep rotation. They have the potential to have five number two starters in there. Now, Sabathia throughout his career has been a number one starter, whether he is at that level anymore, we're not sure. But you look at Sabathia, Kuroda, Tanaka, Nova, and if Pineda ends up winning that fifth spot, those are all guys where you could say, hey, you know what, the 1 through 5, they've got, you know, top 2 or 3 caliber starters in those spots.
Yes, they do. And let's not forget about David Phelps as well. He's another one who the Yankees are banking highly on in the future. And if he has one of these seasons this year like they think he's going to, that is a pretty impressive staff, albeit an older staff. Hiroki Kuroda, he kind of scares me from a fantasy level. But again, he's another one who's going to probably pitch 180 innings or better. And that has to bode well for the Yankees. Now, his control is going to be the issue, I think.
Sure. The age is always an issue. They've got the potential to have some balance there, though. They've got Ivan Nova, who's only 27. They've got Pineda, if he bounces back. I saw his first start ever. He pitched against the Rangers when I worked there. And I remember coming away thinking just how good this guy could be. And then, of course, he had all the injury problems. But he's not an old guy. And then you add in Phelps, who's in his mid-20s. You've got a chance for some good balance there and a little bit of depth, which is something that the Yankees have had a little trouble with over the last few years, primarily because their farm system hasn't produced the way it did in the 90s.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. Now, here's the potential starting lineup for the New York Yankees this season. Jacoby Ellsbury, Derek Jeter, Carlos Beltran, Mark Teixeira, who we'll have to wait and see. We'll talk about him in a minute. Brian McCann, Alfonso Soriano, Brett Gardner, Kelly Johnson, and Brian Roberts. That's a lineup that's going to score some runs.
If assuming those guys produce to their track record, absolutely. And you've got a pretty nice balance there. You've got some guys with some speed. You've got some guys with some power. You've got some guys with both. You've got the potential to have a very productive lineup there if they're all in it.
I'll tell you what, the best pickup they made was Brian McCann. I was looking this up the other day to prepare for this show. His fly ball rate to home run is 16.3%, which is higher than he's ever been last season. When he lifts the ball in the air, that ball goes out. And let's not forget, most of his home runs do go to right field, and that is Yankee home run heaven. This could be a monster year for Brian McCann.
Agreed. He's got the potential to produce all kinds of power for them. And if he's got Ellsbury and Jeter hitting ahead of him, who may be on base a lot, he's got a chance to put up a bunch of RBIs.
Absolutely. Now, the 3 through 6 hitters, you got Beltran slated potentially at number 3, Teixeira at number 4, McCann number 5, and Alfonso Soriano. You're looking at 3 guys, though. Beltran, Teixeira, and Soriano, who've had some health issues in the past. And, you know, once you miss an extended amount of time on the DL, it usually means you're going to do that in the future. So this is going to be interesting, especially with Teixeira. If he were a tennis player, he'd be finished.
Yes, I would agree with that. Teixeira has an excellent work ethic. You know, he's going to do his best to come back and be productive. He's another one of those guys that gets on base a lot. So if McCann is hitting home runs, you expect Teixeira, if he's hitting ahead of McCann in the order, is going to be there a lot for him. Teixeira brings a lot to the table when he's healthy. Good glove, good power, gets on base a lot. If the Yankees are going to succeed, you would have to think that Teixeira is going to be a big key to it, and they don't have a ton of depth at that position.
No, they do not, do they? I believe, let me see here, I wrote this down. They really have no one, really no one to just come in. I suppose what they could do is perhaps move like a Brendan Ryan over or an Eduardo Nunez over, maybe try to make Francisco Cervelli a first baseman. They could also make Brian McCann probably a first baseman. I'm not sure. But they have some issues there. Derek Jeter, his final season. We're going to see a lot of goodbyes to Derek Jeter. Do you think that stuff gets overblown, or you think he deserves it?
I sort of have my view of Derek Jeter is that the man has accomplished a great deal in the game. He has done He has won World Series. He has put up monster seasons. I soured on him a bit a few years back when he blatantly tried to fool the umpire into thinking he had been hit by a pitch when in fact he knew he had not. I'm not a big fan of cheating, and so that soured my opinion of him just a little bit, but I don't know him personally, so I can't really tell, you know, too much about his character. As far as honoring him, I mean, based on what he's accomplished on the field, you have to say, well, yeah, this guy is one of the greats and likely a early, if not first ballot, early Hall of Famer. So I can understand teams and the Yankees making a big deal of it.
Sure, I can too. I really can. He's been the consummate professional while he's been in New York, living in that fishbowl. And that's a beautiful thing. And, you know, apart from some things on the field that he's pulled, I think he's going to go in first ballot. But it is what it is. Brett Gardner, he's another one who's could steal a lot of bases for the Yankees in the bottom of that lineup. But again, he's got some issues with his health, too, in the past. And this is a team that either they're going to make or break, and it's all going to be based around health.
Agreed. Gardner, they just signed him to a contract extension. It brings you a ton of versatility defensively as well, in addition to what he can do when he's on base. He's a valuable player. The outfield is one area where the Yankees do have a bit of depth because they've got Ichiro out there. You've got Soriano who can jump out and play the outfield. They've got some options there. That's one of the areas where if something does happen, they might have a chance to make up that depth from within. The other thing with the Yankees, too, you know, they have the second highest payroll in baseball, but you have to figure if there's a hole at midseason and they can somehow fill it with a midseason trade, they're going to have the resources to do it.
Oh, that's exactly correct. You know, David Robertson, he has the unenviable job of being the closer, stepping in for the legend himself, Mariano Rivera. And David Robinson's got a lot of pressure on him, doesn't he?
He is. I'm going to liken it to David Moyes taking over for Sir Alex at Manchester United. That, to me, is the sort of the size of what he has to come in and try to fill. And it hasn't gone well for Manchester United this year. Robertson maybe has a bit better track record and will be able to handle the role.
I think they're going to wind up, if he struggles, is making a closer by committee or going on the waiver wire and trying to find somebody and just audition people. Because this team, if they stay healthy, they're not going to have a problem scoring runs. The pitching staff is probably going to keep games under 4 runs a game. So it should be an interesting season for the Yankees. If you had to pick where you think they might finish, and we talked about this last week, any one of these teams in the East could finish first or fifth, and you wouldn't be completely off the wall by choosing that. Where would you put the Yankees?
You know, they won 85 games last year, despite all the injuries, all the issues they had, all the A-Rod distractions. I kind of feel like they have improved their club in the offseason. So therefore, you almost have to say, well, you know what? I think there's a good chance they're going to win more games than that. The question then becomes, how many games is it going to take to win the East? How many wins are you going to have? I'm going to put the Yankees third, but I think they could fall anywhere from first to fifth, as any team in that division could.
Yeah, that's a good pick, right in the middle.
You're very safe, smart. Huh?
Yeah, you took the safe route. I'm going to say they're going to win their division and they're going to create a circus while they do it. Anyway, great stuff tonight, Rush. Thank you so much for being on the show with me.
You bet, Phil.
All right, that was Rush Olson. And you can find him at rusholson.com. Coming up next, Alex Hall and I will talk Oakland A's baseball, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
You are a meathead, dead from the neck up.
After these brief messages.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewton Sports. Listen 24/7 at BrewtonSports.podomatic.com.
Are you a fan of historical fiction? If you are, then why not try author Mary Ann Bernal's The Briton and the Dane series of historical fiction novels? You can purchase these novels from her website at www.maryannbernal.com. That's www.maryannbernal.com. Are you looking to escape into lands full of fantasy, drama, and adventure? If you are, why not try author Kay Metter's books? Their Journey Begins, Journey to Freedom, The Night of the Dixie Wilds, On Top of the Rainbow, and Transcendence will get you there. Kay Metter's books are available as an ebook or in paperback, and you can find her at authorkmetter.com. That's authorkmeador.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So once you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcasts.net, you can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at baseballpodcasts.net.
Riveting talk radio. Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
That freaks me out. My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
Back to the Phil Nasons Show.
Shut up! Shut up!
Yes! Shut up!
Shut up! You're telling me to shut up?
Please, just shut up. I am so sick of hearing you talking all the time. Don't you ever just shut up?
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The Oakland A's are probably down to who's going to be the final spot on their roster. And we're going to talk a little Houston Astros baseball. Are they going to be as bad as everyone thinks they are? Or more importantly, are they going to be as bad as they usually are? And joining me to talk about all that and more, please welcome from AthleticsNation.com, Alex Hall is in the house. Alex, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
I'm ready for some more spring training.
Yeah, you know, I watched the Mets and the Nationals play. I said this before on the show at the beginning. It took me 7 hours to download that game, man. I just wanted to watch a full game of baseball. But it took forever, man.
Hey, I'll tell you, I found a thing that was posted on SB Nation last year. It's a full broadcast from a 1934 Yankees-Tigers game. It's the radio broadcast as like a YouTube video with just the audio. I'm excited to listen to that.
I am too. I love radio, old radio, because I grew up with that kind of sort of thing. Maybe not that far back, but still in all. When I was a kid coming up, we didn't have cable TV yet, and all we had was the radio. We had the Saturday game of the week. We had the Monday night baseball game. And then we'd get some local coverage, like, sprinkled in. So I didn't get to see baseball the way folks do now. We relied on the newspapers, Sports Illustrated. There wasn't even sports talk radio, really. There was a couple little shows here and there, but not much to talk about or speak of. And you just had to trust the reporters, and you had to trust the baseball announcers. So I'm digging that, man. I'm going to have to go check that out.
I'll send you this link. I'm excited.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'm looking forward to that. Now, what you're looking at with the Oakland A's, really, the team is pretty much set. You're looking at, what, one spot left, and that's going to go between probably Alberto Callaspo or, it would be Derek Barton or Stephen Vogt, right?
Yeah, it looks like it's down to probably those three guys. And that's a little different than what I usually expect out of one of these roster battles, because it's not two guys who necessarily play the same position fighting for that spot. It's three totally different players who could all bring something very different. You've got Callaspo, who's, you could say, the incumbent, since he was on the team quite a bit last year. They were all on the team last year at some point. But Callaspo gives you a guy who, he's a switch hitter, but he hits much better from the right side against left-handed pitching. He can play, his best position is third base, but of course you don't need him there with Donaldson. Last year he was playing second, platooning with Eric Sogard, but now you've signed Nick Punto to take that role. So I don't know that you really need Callaspo at second, where he's also not a very good defender. And the A's have talked about that he could get some at-bats at first base against left-handed pitching as a platoon mate for Brandon Moss. I don't really understand that suggestion, since he's never played first and he's kind of a small guy. I think he's like 5'9". Seems like an odd fit for first base to shoehorn him in like that. So he's a very talented guy. I like him a lot as a hitter, but it's tough to see where he fits in on the field defensively. I don't know how much of a utility guy you can be if you don't play shortstop and you're poor at second. If you're only good on the corners, that's not as useful. Then you've got Derek Barton, more or less useful depending on how you look at it, because he only plays the one position at first base, but he's very good at it. He's better at first base probably than Callaspo is even at third. So he is going to bring some defensive value there, especially because Brandon Moss is not a very good defender at first. He also hits, he's got a reverse platoon split, which means that although he's a left-handed batter, he hits left-handed pitching better, quite a bit better for his career, actually. If you look at his career numbers, significantly better from the against left-handed pitching. So that could be another platoon option for Moss. Let Moss get some time in the outfield, and you've got a solid hitter when you put him in the right situations. And then you've got Stephen Vogt, who could be your third catcher. And the reason you might want a third catcher, whereas normally that would be maybe a bit of a luxury, a little bit excessive, but you've got John Jaso as one of the catchers right now, and he's got a couple of problems with him. The first is he had a concussion problem last year. It knocked him out for the last two or three months of the season. I think he was out in July and he never came back. It's a big deal. And as we know, concussions have been a big story in baseball, especially for catchers recently. So if you're already having those problems, you don't necessarily want to push it too much. You know, careers can end this way by getting too many concussions. And if not a career, what if we miss him for half a season again this year because he gets a concussion? So you have to consider how much you want to get him back behind the plate, knowing you have this injury risk. The problem is he's also a terrible defender behind the plate, which makes it less attractive to, again, to try to shoehorn him in there. Why go so far out of your way and risk injury for a guy who's not very good at the thing you're trying to get him to do? Jaso's strength is in his hitting. He's a fantastic hitter. He crushes right-handed pitching. I like him better as a designated hitter. Keep that bat in the lineup, because that bat is good enough on its own to be in the lineup, in the proper situation against right-handers. Whereas I don't get why you would want him to catch. He sucks at it, and he might get hurt even worse. So that's why I like Vogt on the roster as that third catcher. But there's one more wrinkle, as there always is. Vogt is the only one who can get sent down to the minors without losing him. Derek Barton is out of options. If you send him down, he has to go through waivers, and I bet someone will pick him up. If I'm the Brewers, or if I'm I think maybe the Pirates or something. No, the Pirates got someone. If I'm the Brewers, I want Barton. And there was another team, I forget who it is, that should be jumping on them. Kiaspo also can't be sent down to the minors. You'd have to trade him to get rid of him. But Vogt, you can stash down in the minors. Just like the A's have stashed Eric O'Flaherty on the DL and stashed Joe Savory in the minors to have some depth they can call on in a long season. Send Vogt down. You buy some extra time with your Barton Kiaspo decision. Maybe one of them sucks this year. Maybe someone else gets hurt and another spot opens up. But if you send Vogt down and keep the other two, you have bought yourself time and you haven't lost any players from the organization. So I don't know how this is going to play out, but those are your players and those are their situations. And that's, I think, the big thing of what we're going to be looking at in spring training is which of those three guys makes the team.
Sounds like an interesting little battle there. You know, I, while you were talking there, I'm thinking, hey, this could be the time for my boy Addison Russell to make an appearance, but I understand why they can't. But I gotta ask you, did you see those two catches that Josh Reddick made opening day? You know, something to do that. And this isn't the first time that he's gone like 12 feet in the air to go steal a home run. But you know how unlikely that is, and he's done it often? You have to be in the right place at the right time. Everything has to like line up perfectly, and it just seems to.
Twice against the same hitter.
Yeah, that's just amazing, man. And it's his buddy too, you know, Michael Morris. Those guys are friends, and they were laughing at each other. Oh, you owe me dinner. I owe you more than that. You just made me a legend on YouTube forever. But that's incredible, and that's an incredible battle. And what we're gonna have to watch this over the next, say, week to 10 days to see just what Oakland intends to do. Now, inside the West, you've got the Houston Astros, who honestly, they've been perennially bad for a while. They've had some great players come through there, but they seem to get rid of them. This season, they've seemed to step it up a bit rather than the traditional or usual fire sale. They brought in kids like Dexter Fowler, and they've made some other moves. They've got some nice young kids there. But honestly, do you think that that's going to make much of a difference for that baseball team?
Sure. So what you have right now is an Astros team that has lost 324 games the last 3 years. That's an average of 108 losses per year. Not only that, they lost 106 games in 2011. And then they got worse both of the next 2 years. Think of it that way. To lose 106 and get worse and then get worse again. That's unbelievable. But the thing is, this was not them being inept. This was not stupidity. This was losing by design for a greater long-term goal. And it can be tough to swallow as a fan of the team, even if you fully understand where they're going with it. What they did was tear down and rebuild to an extent that we don't often see in sports, or at least in baseball, at least in non-Marlins baseball. They just tore down everything. They traded anybody who wasn't super young and could return any kind of asset at all. And they ended up with this pool of young players. And what they had to do the last couple of years was throw them all out there and see which ones could stick and hold their own and become solid major leaguers. Not necessarily that any of those guys were going to be on the next good Astros team, but just find out what we've got and who might stick around for the next few years here. And it's gone, well, poorly on the field, but all of those losses, what they've done is allowed the team to weed out some of those players who they don't need to keep around. Guys like maybe Brett Wallace or Jordan Lyles, who was traded over the offseason. And they've been able to stick with some of these guys who look like they might have promise, like a guy like Jared Cozart or Brett Oberholzer or Brad Peacock, three guys who we weren't talking about in the first half of last year, but in the second half, they put up very good performances. Cozart had an ERA under 2. Oberholzer was about 250. Granted, I don't expect either of them to come close to matching those ERAs over a full season, but they could at least be solid starters. They could give you a decent full season that's still a valuable commodity to have a solid, average-ish starting pitcher. Brad Peacock added a slider midseason, and he took off. He was fantastic in about 9 second-half starts. again, small sample, but it gives you hope that he could become something bigger, you know, next year or in the future. Some of their hitters, they figured out which ones might be decent. Chris Carter doesn't do a lot, but he hits a ton of homers, and if you use him as a DH and get him off of defense, he can be valuable. Matt Dominguez isn't a name anyone talks about. He's got a lot of flaws, but he's got some power, and he can be an above-average hitter. I think he's a decent defender. They have some big prospects coming up, like George Springer, who is one of the very top prospects in baseball, an outfielder with power and speed. So the point is, they have cut some of the some of the chaff, and they've kept the worthwhile players around. Don't get me wrong, this is still a last place team, but where they've been losing 105, 110 games these last few years, maybe they only lose 90 or 95 this year, and you can start to see how they can work towards being a good team sometime in the future. The key, I think, to why they're going to be better this year, specifically why they won't lose 110 games, is they finally went out and got some veterans. They weren't wasting time and money on short-term players before, but they've gone out and gotten Scott Feldman and Jerome Williams to stabilize the rotation and at least eat some innings and not suck. And they've got Dexter Fowler in center. He's a solid veteran. They added a few relievers, Chad Qualls, Matt Albers, Jesse Crane. So there's at least some reliable arms in the pen. These aren't amazing moves, but they're the kind of moves that take you from 110 losses to 90 losses.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you just said, but here's the problem. Of all the starters they have, none of those guys will give them 180 innings, and you need that to be successful. And then you've got Dexter Fowler, who started off the season last year hot as a firecracker, but those numbers were inflated because he was playing in Coors. The ones that you have that are going to actually help them in the future is Jose Altuve. He's probably your best bet if you're a fantasy player anyway. He's your best bet. Jason Castro is okay. But it's Chris Carter. He's going to hit a lot of bombs. Good call in the DH. That's where he belongs. Jesus Guzman, he's another one who has some potential. But outside of that, Jonathan Villar, I'm sorry, too. He's a shortstop. He's okay. But this is not a team. There's not a star on this team. Maybe Altuve could be at some point. But they don't have anything that can really bank the move. Now, will they break 100 this year? I don't know, man. That's tough. With this pitching staff they have, dude, I'm not so sure. But you know, it's interesting what they put together.
While they have no stars, what they've done is they've cut they may not have the high ceiling guys. They've cut the really low floor guys. I look at their pitching staff last year. Three guys with 150 innings. Dallas Keuchel was terrible. Lucas Herrera was even worse. Eric Bedard was pretty bad. They're all gone. Jordan Lyles was next. He was horrible. They've cut that, and now at the top you have a guy like Scott Feldman. He's not a star. Maybe he throws 200 innings, maybe he doesn't. But even if he throws 180, he's been at least a solid above-average starter in several seasons in his career. That's something the Astros didn't have. Not even one guy who was just decent, average all year. Not even one. I think Feldman could be that. I think either Cozart or Oberholzer could be that. I think Peacock could be that. Even, well, maybe not Williams, but at least he could eat some innings and not have an ERA of 5.50. And having your guys have an ERA of 4.50 instead of 5.50, well, that's going to be a big difference right there. That's 162 runs over the course of the season, right? So these little differences on the margin where you've just added an okay player instead of an abjectly terrible player, this is where I'm talking about getting up, you know, towards 90 wins. They're still going to be bad. There's no stars. But I look at this, and they're just regular bad. They're not legendary Astros bad.
All right. You know what? We'll have to see. Great stuff today, Alex. Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil.
All right. That was Alex Hall. You can find him at athleticsnation.com, and that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all the guys for making this a fun day of Major League Baseball talk. Tomorrow we'll be talking hoops and Brewers baseball. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
This has been a pre-recorded edition of the Phil Nason Show. Please like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at FlashTennis31. As always, thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
We'll be right back.